Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Gentlemen, go for a wild, wild ride with the Watusi cats. But beware, the sweetest kittens have the sharpest claws. For your own safety, see faster, pussycat. Kill, kill. Wild women, wild wheels. Race the fastest pussycats, and they'll beat you to death. Superwoman, belted, buckled, and booted.
Yeah. 10% of your action be enough for anyone.
Too much for one man to handle. And again, you never can tell.
You girls a bunch of nudists, or you just short of clothes?
You got two of everything, and some left over.
You did want. You wanted big.
Breast or thigh, darling?
Why don't you take one of each, son? They both look tender. He's got a big motor to feed.
Name it, we've got it. Faster pussycat kills, delivers tons more than the opposition. Unladylike karate chops, ungentlemanly haymakers, spirited gymnastics, corrective table etiquette, sandbox jousting, or a muscle-bound cat wrestling with a roaring sports car that's intent upon squashing him like a grape. Bizarre kidney and chassis-rattling chases, and for the first time on the screen, a haymaking, belly-busting, karate-chopping, judo-flipping fight to end them all. Superwoman against man. The prize, life itself. Slashing, tackling, gouging, hacking, flipping, belting, smashing, and blasting. Muscle to muscle, bone to bone. For an incredible evening's entertainment, a film so totally satisfying, see Russ Meyer's Faster Pussycat. Kill, kill.
Why, hello, it is 34 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet notably ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us and drawing near that ye might be amused and informed on this day. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2011, and welcome to day 12. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. And here are the items on today's agenda. We have a corpse watch coming up today. Also, Hick Watch on the way. Also, I guess what probably counts as a geek watch, we're going to be joined by Mr. Aaron Cronin. He's the author of a new comic book called Cognition, The Robot Uprise, which is getting stellar advance reviews. The release and signing happened this coming Sunday at Bridge City Comics with After Party to follow. I guess you could tell because it's an after party. That is happening at Mississippi Studios. So that is this coming Sunday, 5 p.m. for the signing, the release, and then 7:30 the after party happens at Mississippi Studios. And he's going to be in the studio with us here today and talk a bit about the comic book that is Cognition, The Robot Uprise. You can read a little bit more about that. Well, if you go online and just Google it, you'll find Cognition, The Robot Uprise, and there's a small piece in today's Willamette, in which they give it a lot of... a lot of advanced praise. So that is coming up later on. Let's see, what else do I have here? It's something else that I wanted to read. Well, this is really just an observation. This is from last hour when I was talking about pregnant chicks. And this guy just says, he's from Legion of News. Listener Tom says, okay, let me ask you this. Do you ever just see somebody's email address, or you see, like, not even their email address, but, like, maybe the name they use? Because it doesn't always say, like, Don Taylor. Sometimes it'll be, this is my other email. And then you look at the address and it's like, Zizzlefarb 5 yeah. at whatever. This is just, you know, he's a photo guy.
Yeah, I get emails from him all of the time. Yes.
And he says, but I never knew why that was. Like, if I'd asked you, why do you think it's photo guy?
I assume that he works at a photo place or something.
See, that's, I would have assumed, obviously, that he worked somewhere with, but I didn't know the specifics. He says, I work as a photographer for adult sites.
Oh.
He says, and preggers are a huge fetish category. You're quite normal, Rick. Excellent. Good to hear. How many times a day do I hear that? Almost never. So that is Tom. Well, now I want to know what sites he photographs for. Because there's...
I was just exchanging email with him in which I had to explain a witty reference I made to a Neil Gaiman story that he didn't get. So,
is this the same Neil Gaiman thing that you were just referencing that I didn't get?
No.
World of Gods or Gods of
no,
World or World of Men? Or
something entirely different. It had something to do with the Holy Grail. And he said something about finding the Holy Grail in a bush outside his house. And I wrote back and said that I found it in a thrift store. And I kept it on my mantle until a man on a horse came to harass me about it. And then I told him he'd get 5 points if he got the reference. And he didn't.
What is the reference?
It's to a Neil Gaiman short story called Chivalry, about an old woman who finds the Holy Grail in a thrift store. And then Galahad comes and asks her for it because, you know, he's on the quest. And she says, no, it looks very nice on her mantle. She really doesn't want to give it up.
Good reference.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, so that all just happened just now. Hey, did you see this story where the poll quote is, it felt like we were living in Satan's lair?
Yes, I did say that.
Okay, we're going to get to that later on?
Sure.
It's a story just full of snakes. I mean, really, it's packed with snakes. There couldn't possibly be more snakes in the story. So we'll get to all of that on the way we get to your Hick Watch, Corpse Watch. We have Mr. Aaron Cronin coming in the studio to talk about Cognition, the robot uprise. At some point today, Dawn might paranoically go check to see if her car is parked in front of a hydrant because she got nailed for a $105 ticket yesterday when she left the studio.
Dude, am I allowed any secrets?
No.
Any at all?
I'm sorry. Was that a secret? I guess it was until just now.
Yeah.
Okay. Please tell us what headlines we'll be hearing on this Thursday, Dawn Taylor.
Well, New York State senators are going over the language for the same-sex marriage bill. A woman is charged with damaging her boyfriend's testicles during a fight.
Damaging is a bad word.
Yes.
Almost setting fire to or cutting off might even be better than damaging, because damaging just makes you feel... That's just sort of a spongy, bruised kind of a situation.
Yeah. And a Japanese man is arrested for collecting schoolgirls' saliva.
Okay. That's wonderful. And by wonderful, I mean horrible. On the issue of, quote, pregger porn, someone says, yes, because I like my chicks to be bloated and stretch marked and vomiting. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, really, depending on what it is, that could just be the case, like with almost anyone. This is a fair question. The immediate response is, why is a parking ticket a secret when Uncle Makeout Sessions and Lost Dildos aren't? I think that's a fair point. That is really, that does deserve being addressed.
Yeah, we all have different things that we're embarrassed by.
You talked about your car being towed the other, you know, the last thing that happened with your car was.
And I think that's why I didn't want to mention this one, because I just feel like a huge tool.
Well,
because the thing is, this is Portland, so the odds that you're going to actually get a ticket anywhere are fairly slim usually.
Except if it's on a street where you've already been towed. I mean, that's the thing that I think would indicate that maybe the odds are a trifle higher than they might be at just your random street somewhere in America.
And the whole parking in front of a hydrant thing is just so bogus anyway, particularly when it's just a case of your bumper is hanging a few inches over into the yellow portion, I wasn't parked in front of the hydrant.
But you understand why they do that, though, because they got to have a line of demarcation exactly because of people like you who would otherwise claim that they are abusing their authority. So if it were up to their discretion,
I know why they do it.
I'm just saying.
I was in the wrong. I fully admit that.
I'm just saying, but it's not only that it's not bogus, it's done specifically so that there is no debate about whether or not you're being unfairly punished.
Yes, I know.
They just say, like, here's the line. So I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. I'm just saying. And I didn't realize it was a secret.
I hoped foolishly that she wouldn't mention it to you.
Sarah?
Yes.
Oh, no, she totally mentioned it to me.
And so, therefore, I would not have to talk about it later.
No, she hella mentioned it.
Because I haven't even actually told Patrick about it yet, because I know he's going to be like...
Hello, Patrick.
He's going to be like really, really, really annoyed.
We could call him. Make sure that he knows if he doesn't now. Is he listening live, do you think?
No, he's not.
Okay.
So the thing is, he won't know until I, like, actually tell him.
No one tell Patrick. Let's all keep it a secret here. We're just going to,
I'm looking at you, Jamie Kirk. If you see him today, if he delivers to your damn place of business and you see him, don't tell him about my damn ticket.
So this isn't really, it's not that the ticket itself is a secret, it's that it's a secret from your husband.
At the moment, yes. Yeah, it won't be a secret for very long, but I just didn't
You've just become that woman.
I just didn't really want to deal with it.
You've become the woman who doesn't want to tell her husband about a vehicular mishap that she's had.
I know.
Stand on a chair. Yell about mice. Do it.
I don't want to tell him that I spent all of our grocery money on a new hat.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, it's going to be a great day. I can just tell. if you'd like to get in touch with us today, it's 503-505-6964. That is our telephone number. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at rickemerson.com. That is Rick, not Rickett, but Rick at rickemerson.com. Let's see. You can also hit us up via Skype if you like. It is Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username. Rick Emerson Show, all one word. Let's see what else. Text box open on the website, or you can email Dawn. That is Dawn at rickemerson.com. Dawn at rickemerson.com. Yes, I was here. By the way, in case anybody didn't hear this, and in case, you know, I don't know if you're just lacking amusement later on. Well, first of all, you should hear today's... once you were done listening to this program, you apparently should hear today's installment of FunEmploymentRadio.com because Mr. Paul Mooney was the guest, which, well played, Sarah and Greg.
I know.
Because he never does online stuff. He never does podcasts. He never does internet interviews at all.
And he's a big deal.
He's a huge deal. And Paul Mooney is the real... I mean, he's the real stuff. And
We're getting into, genuine, A-list comedian territory here.
He actually told them, and this is the thing, and this is not, you know, it's not like I'm the first guy to say that. I mean, they obviously knew this. But this is the thing that I've said about Greg and Sarah all along is that they were really, really smart to sort of, to carve out the comedian territory, because the thing is, comedians all talk to each other. They all know each other. And I was like, well, the more comedian, you know, you start with, your F-listers, but the more of those guys you interview, the more that they're going to meet, you know, G-listers and B-listers and C-listers, and they're all going to tell each other, and then eventually they're going to start telling people, not that lower, you know, level comedians don't actually matter, but you know what I mean? They're going to start telling people who are more famous, more prominent. And so I'm walking on the street today, and so I was like, OMG, we totally had Paul Mooney in the studio. And I'm like, you're lying. Paul Mooney doesn't do internet shows. And
I saw him. I didn't talk to him or anything, but
really?
I saw him.
Did you? Did he smell of lavender and spice?
I didn't smell him either.
He probably just smells of awesome.
But Keelan was here, and Keelan sat in the studio while they did the interview. And after it was over, and Paul Mooney left, and Keelan was just floating.
Oh yeah,
like in just sort of a fanboy sort of a haze. And he was coming back in, and I heard him telling Sarah, "It's like, Can you send me that photo of me with Paul Mooney? I just got to get that photo. I got to send it to my dad.
Yeah,
got to have that."
That is totally, and the thing is, Paul Mooney is one of those guys who in recent years, you know, has started to get some of the due, that he had coming, because for a long time he just wrote for other comedians. You know, he wrote with and for Richard Pryor to some degree.
Well, he's just brilliant.
Yeah,
he is,
and
just
he's
a brilliant,
fantastic.
Deeply intelligent man. Just so brilliant.
If you want to, and his stand-up is actually not that easy to find, depending on where you are. I guess the internet has made that a lot easier. He got some exposure back in 2003, I think. He got some big screen time. He was in Bamboozled, and he played Keenan Ivory Wayans' dad, Peerless Dofit. He played his father, and he played essentially himself. He played himself kind of as a comedian, and there are extended sequences of him doing his stand-up. And Spike Lee actually notes on the commentary that, you know, he felt it was really important to give him a place in the film to do his stand-up, because he was a guy that continues to be so influential and is just so smart and textured and funny, but didn't ever really, either intentionally or inadvertently, did not market himself or position himself in a way to achieve mainstream sort of watered down success the way that a lot of comics did. And so he was underneath the radar for a lot of America for a long time. It's not like I'm some Paul Mooney expert either.
I think a lot of people, the only time they may have ever really seen him, in fact, was when he had a regular feature on Chappelle's show.
Well, Chappelle, and that was another thing where Chappelle was just like, Chappelle actually said something in an interview one time. He said that, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something to the effect of, he said the entire show, the entire experience, he's like, if all I ever do is introduce Paul Mooney to more Americans, he's like, then I have done my job. So anyway, but he was on FunEmploymentRadio.com today. You can listen to that. But then yesterday, I was in, and you had to go do Ham-Fisted Radio, which I'm sure was also genius and fantastic
and flawless,
wonderful. I stuck around to be on funemploymentradio.com, and so that was how I'd known about the ticket, because Sarah came up from smoking, and she's like, so I had to give Don some more bad news. And I said, what's that? Really excitedly.
Rubbing your hands together with glee.
Is it leukemia? Said, no, she got a $105 ticket in her car, and I actually just said, oh, that sucks, because it does suck.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, so then I stuck around, and I took part in this bit they were doing yesterday, where Sarah read aloud to Greg and I Encyclopedia Brown Mysteries, and then Greg and I had to sort of face off to see who could solve the Encyclopedia Brown case. By the way, that'd be Rick 2, Greg 0.
Oh.
0. Rick Emerson solved both of those without additional clues or hints, by the way. Just FYI, if you're keeping score.
Good for you.
I explained to her that was one of the reasons, that was a demonstration of why I can't go to Geek Trivia or any trivia. Because, again, I don't care if I give a rat's ass if I solve some Encyclopedia Brown case. They're for 9-year-olds. But it's like as soon as she started reading them, there was like all this disproportionate importance I was putting on it in my head. And suddenly it became a whole thing where, like, if I had not solved them, or if I had lost to Greg somehow, I would have just seethed about it like all day. So anyway, so that was yesterday, and then the pulmonary thing was today, and so forth, and et cetera.
Yes.
All right. How's your life going, Don? Other than the ticketing and the hey. And
well, you know, that's the thing is this is what I'm really tired of. I'm really looking forward to this, to trying to get through a period where I realize this. I got the ticket. The new place I moved into, it has this really, really steep driveway, and I smacked my muffler. And so it, like, cracked my muffler, and now...
This is last night?
This was, like, within the last couple of days.
Okay.
Yeah, and so now it's, like, I have loud muffler, loud, rattly muffler.
Or no, it's the...
It's like the... Yeah. So I'm, like, driving the Uncle Buck car, basically, without the backfire.
Just bang! Yeah.
And then I actually cleaned out my car today, so when you open the door, the beer cans don't, like, roll out the door like this. But so there's that, and then I got the ticket, and I realized that I'm just really tired of my life being an endless series of me going, oh, come on, really?
Really?
You know, come on. So, yeah, so that. But I have learned I'm unraveling more in the mystery of the previous tenants. I'm putting together a profile now of these people who lived there. Because, as mentioned before, there was the big grow umbrella.
Right.
And I guess they had kind of trashed the place. I know that they were smokers because there's this some kind of a stone bunny or a frog or something outside, just outside patio door that's full of cigarette butts. So I know that. And then last night I was going through, I opened some of the cabinets in the bathroom and realized I hadn't opened a couple of the bathroom cabinets. And I was like, ooh, a drawer. And I looked in the drawer. I was like, ooh, like 6 bars of Dove soap. Thank you, previous tenant. So left some soap. That's nice. Opened another cabinet, found this folded piece of blue paper. So I pulled it out and I opened it up, and it's a it's an information sheet from Planned Parenthood.
Oh God.
And it's giving the instructions for using the morning after pill.
Oh, that's fantastic. And horrible. Can I?
Sure. There you go.
Oh wow.
The first the first page is just like, so you're taking contraceptives. And then the second page is, so you're taking a contraceptive because you didn't have protected sex last night.
Jesus.
Yeah, the one you're looking at now is just the general contraceptive sheet.
I mean, really, it's just the I'm looking through, this is all not for the morning after pill, but I mean it's like pages and pages of, first of all, how hard is it to just put on make your boyfriend put on a rubber? You know, I mean, so then there's this whole page here, the emergency contraceptive pill, ECP, morning after pill, are safe and effective, but please read the possible advantages. Well, first of all, I think the advantage is self-evident. I think
yeah,
the advantage
is... I think we know what the advantage is.
You want to have a child. Disadvantages, we have listed them here for you. Possible side effects include... The thing is, there's no possible side effect here that outweighs the advantage of not having a child.
Right.
I mean, at least, you know, presuming you don't want one of those...
Oh, well, if I'm going to have a little dry mouth, maybe I don't want it. I don't know.
The sooner you start taking your morning after pill, the better. You have to take multiple pills?
There's two different kinds. If you turn it over on the back, it shows they circled one of them, and there's two different kinds. There's one that's, I guess, a series of pills, and there's one that's just like one or something.
You have been given, by the way, and there's a fill-in-the-blanks thing here so they can identify which type of contraception you're taking. You have been given the pills named Plan B. I guess plan A would be think for a goddamn second.
Plan A is don't get drunk and forget to put on a condom.
Tell your jackass boyfriend to go to Plaid Pantry.
Yeah.
Swallow all the pills at one time. Like that's going to be a problem for the girl who needs this checklist. As soon as you take them, as soon as possible, within 120 hours, 5 days after unprotected intercourse, the sooner you take them, the better.
I want to know about the other one, the other plan B
plan
that they
A.
have, which is, which the other one, which is you have to take them within like 5 months or something. So it's kind of like, I can't remember what it's like, but.
Yeah, there's another one here where you can take them later, I guess, but you have to take a larger dose or something.
Yeah.
If you see another clinician for any, if you do not want to become pregnant, it is important to use a reliable form of ongoing birth control. And then they say, in what really should be bolded text, ask us about different options. Seriously. I mean, here's the thing. And isn't it, look, and Rick Emerson's not a, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, that I have always made the right choices in my life in any realm of my existence. But the thing is, like, in 2011, especially, and it's also not like you're, it's not like you're in some blue state, you know? It's not like you're just, like you're in Alabama in 1972. You're in Portland, Oregon in 2011. I mean, they basically just hand you condoms everywhere you go now. Like, it's just, you know, like, instead of getting coupons in the mail, they just send you rubbers. So, and they got the morning after pill, and they got the whatever. And plus, there's like a Planned Parenthood and a whatever, and everywhere they just give you like fistfuls of crap. So that is, I will say, that is the one thing about growing up in the post-AIDS era, is that everywhere you go, there's just big bowls of rubbers just kind of sitting out there. And also, like, and I think if you're a chick, you can get like other forms of birth control, like free or discounted or whatever, right?
Probably, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. I guess I'm glad that the checklist is there, because otherwise it's just going to be some squalling infant that we end up having to pay for.
The plan B, the emergency birth control, is, I think it's a really good, valuable thing. But, yeah, I don't feel so bad about leaving my vibrator behind now.
Yeah, seriously.
Because I found this.
All right. But somebody's saying, how long until you find a severed finger or some other body part in that house as well? Really, it does seem like you've got... So now we've got drugs. We've got unprotected, or at least... Because somebody's saying, well, perhaps they used a male contraptive, and then there was an incident, the condom broke.
Yeah, that could
which
happen.
Does happen from time to time. So, but now, so you've got unintended pregnancy. You've got drugs. I mean, really, what is left to be found in the house? All you need to do is pry open the baseboards and you just see, like, a bunch of money from 1952, you know? Or, like, you know, you just... or you.
I just find a cache of guns in under a floorboard in the back of the closet.
Prohibition whiskey. All right. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'll just put you in the bed there. Put that in the Don Taylor, the ongoing museum of your home.
Yes.
Excellent. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. I don't have anything nearly that exciting to talk about, except I will say, well, there's a couple of things. So I don't know if I mentioned this, that in addition to last night, so the Encyclopedia Brown thing, so I was here yesterday doing Fun Employment Radio with Sarah and Greg, and I schooled Greg on the Donald J. Sobel written mysteries, and then I left, and then I was just pulling into the driveway of my home, getting ready to go in and enjoy a long, relaxing evening, you know, with just myself and the poodles, and you know, thinking about the eternal verities of the universe, when I get this phone call from Greg, and he says, "Hey, it's Greg. Could you do us a bit of a favor?" And I said, and he did it with that sort of that self-deprecating a chuckle, sort of a. You're never gonna.
Can I take a guess what happened?
Yes, you can.
Did they lock themselves on the roof again?
Yes, they did.
Oh my God!
Yes,
really?
They did. They locked themselves on the roof again. So it was not just a day of mishaps for Dawn. It was a day of mishaps for all.
Okay.
So as I was leaving, really pulling into my driveway, the phone rings. And apparently, as I was just leaving here, the building yesterday, they decided to go up on the roof and smoke, not down on the patio, but up top where they could look out on God's creation.
You're not supposed to be smoking on the roof.
Well, I don't know that they were smoking. They were going up there to reflect,
right.
to take a brief respite from the hustle and bustle of daily life. And the door shut behind them. And I guess the reason that they initially didn't panic is because there's a label or a sign or something up there that says, "Here's the door code." The door code apparently is just cosmetic. It's just for decorative purposes. It doesn't actually work. The best part is that Sarah didn't have her phone, and that Greg couldn't find his phone for a while. It was in like a deep pocket of his jacket. So there was like 4 or 5 minutes where they didn't think that there was any way, because they were up there for long enough, and they didn't have a cell phone for long enough, that Greg actually started doing the thing of walking the perimeter of the roof, trying to figure out if there was a way they could jump down onto something that was slightly lower.
Oh, God.
And he said that, by the way, just FYI, this apparently is This apparently is the case for our rooftop patio. If you are accidentally locked up there, not only is there no building that you can jump onto, as Greg put it, the only way that you could conceivably get off the roof without somebody else, like, eventually going for help. And that's the other thing, is it was like 6:30. And so it's like people, rush hour is basically over in this part of town. There's nobody driving by. There's nobody really lives here because we're just businesses until you get like a block or two down the street. And, so there's just nobody
who can... You're screaming to the photo studios and things across the street in the Ford building.
Right, but it's like, and what are they going to do? It's like, they're, you know, even if they showed up, it's not like they have the, it's not like they know the number of anybody who could open the building. That's you know, it's not like they know Donna's number or something. It's like, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, I guess they could go through the phone book and try to, you know, SQU, and try to find the guy who, you know, try to find somebody who has a key, you know. But barring that you're able to find the guy who owns the building or Donna, the office manager thing, even finding somebody in the street isn't going to help you. Because I don't think Greg and Sarah wear their lanyards around their neck. They don't actually have their key cards with them. So there's just nothing to be done. So they had just sort of resigned themselves to the fact that they were going to have to jump off the roof at some point last night. And Greg was actually walking the perimeter of the building trying to figure out exactly how that would work. He said the only way that they came up with is that down at the far end of the building, if you felt adventurous... Which I imagine that's a relative state, like depending on how long you're up here. If you felt adventurous, you could leap off the corner of the building and there was a tree you could probably land in. And you could then scale down the tree to get to the roof. So you would have to jump and then there was like a 5-foot gap and then you would land in a tree. And of course, I was immediately picturing you trying to jump off the roof and land in a tree.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
And anyway, so then I came back and I let them out and it was... And all was right with the world. So there you go. So that's how I spent part of my evening last night.
The only other thing that I had that happened last night is that the UPS guy came and brought our box for our TV, which turned out it was not a DVR, but it's just the cable box.
Oh, from Comcast.
From Comcast. Our Xfinity box.
I'm sorry. Yes, Xfinity.
And the thing is, we still haven't brought a TV from the storage unit yet. So then we just both felt sad because we're sitting there. We have this cable box, but no television.
Okay.
And it was just kind of.
Then it's like it's taunting you.
Yeah. Then it was like, oh, look at all the TV we could be watching if we had the TV here.
There's a world of entertainment in there. If only we could somehow get it out.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. Excellent. So it's been an exciting day for everybody. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-5. Oh, and then my razor broke this morning. I use an electric razor, which actually works really, really fine. Electric razor technology has come a long way because that's one of those things. Electric shave technology is like voice recognition technology in that I used some of the very first voice recognition software to come in the market in 2000, and it just sucked. It was terrible. You had to talk real slowly, and it wasn't accurate. And then about every 5 years, I would pick up like a new copy of like IBM like Via Voice or whatever the hell, and it was always just terrible. It never really worked. And then there was this magical moment, like in 2009, when our pal Nick Miles at the CW. Was using Dragon Dictate, and he's like, oh no, he's like, they've made incredible advances. It works flawlessly. You've got to try it. And I was like, okay. So I picked it up, and sure enough, it was just amazing. So it is with electric razors, because for years, I could never find an electric razor that worked well with my face. And I think a part of that is that I didn't do what you're supposed to do with electric razors, which is to take a 2-week period where you accept that your face is going to look terrible. I guess it takes like 2 weeks for the whiskers on your face, which you have gradually bent over, you know, you've made them lean a certain way, like trees in the wind, by scraping a blade along them for like 20 years. And so as a result, what happens is the whiskers start to just bend a certain way, and that's why the
sort of like crop circles.
Exactly. And so that is why the electric razor takes a couple weeks to actually work, because you've got to sort of adjust those. But sure enough, after 2 weeks, I got 5 or 6 years ago, I picked up an electric razor at Costco of all places. And sure enough, after the 2 week period had elapsed, the thing just started working. It was like one day it just began working flawlessly, and immediately I was like clean. You know, I would come out of the house just clean shaven and fantastic, because that's the one thing that I just don't like doing. I don't like leaving the house unshaven. It's like if your hair is messed up or like you forget to brush your teeth, I can always do that stuff, you know, later. Like I have a toothbrush here or whatever. Leaving the house unshaven is the thing I hate to do. But this morning, I think I've finally gotten to the point where it's just like that, whatever, like the internal, the battery or the whatever has just reached that point where it just doesn't want to charge anymore. But I discovered this as I was getting ready to leave the house. And so now I'm unshaven, but then it's like a last-minute solution. As a last-minute solution to my unshaven face, because I didn't want to come here and look like a hobo, I brought one of my wife's, one of my wife's lady razors. It's a pink.
Oh, it's pink.
It's a pink bladed razor, which I now realize I can't even actually use because I don't have like, I have no emollient with me.
You have the hand lotion. You could use that.
Could I use like a regular pump hand lotion?
Yeah. It would slicken your face.
Man, I can say I'm gonna get an awful bout of razor burn with this thing. But even using the lotion, it's like my face. I'm gonna look like a maraschino cherry. I mean that I think I might just be better waiting it out. So I don't know. I thought about just shaving. See, and then I thought about, well, I'll just shave like the neck area, of course. But then it's like you're a guy that has like then I'm George Michael, you know, but like in a horrible, unsexy way. So. I don't know. So Aaron Cronin's just going to have to see me unshaven, I think. Because if I do this, here first of all...
I don't think he'll mind too much. He's sort of... have you met him before?
No.
He's kind of like Aaron Duran light.
By light, do you mean white?
I mean white and a little bit more slender and whiter and a little bit less facial hair, but the same kind of glasses. His voice is very similar.
Weird.
Which is a little bit higher. He is sort of like a... kind of a weird, you know, he's like Aaron Duran light.
Is this sort of like how Aaron Duran is like David Walker light?
Kind of, a little bit, yeah, because I saw him at Geek Trivia and somebody said something about Aaron and he was up at the front and I looked up and at first I thought it was Aaron and he was holding up a comic book and he was talking about it and then I realized there was something just a little off and I realized that Aaron has gotten a little bit heavier the last few years, so it's like this guy had just a little bit more hair and a little bit less beard.
Okay.
And I realized that's not Aaron Duran.
All right.
It's another Aaron that kind of falls into the same sort of general category.
So I don't need to. You're saying I don't really need to pretty up for him?
I don't think so. I think he'll be fine. He'll just be so thrilled to be here. He'll just be thrilled to be here with Portland's own Rick Emerson.
By the way, people have said you can use either a lotion or hand soap. But here's the thing. One, I have no styptic pencil. So I'd be like that guy from Airplane 2. I would just be bleeding everywhere. And it's like, nobody wants that. And also, again, it would just be, you know, it's that thing of just the scrape. And I would just, and my whole face would be just, I'd have that weird tingly, glowy pain thing going on from not having used a blade on my face for like 7 years.
Yeah, you're really better off with just a little bit of stubble than a red, glowy, icky face.
Or imagine if you're just sitting there trying to be interviewed by some guy and he's bleeding everywhere. And then I should totally do that and then just no one mention it, you know? And just interview Aaron while bleeding, but make no reference to it and don't explain it in any way. We'll just pretend it's not happening. Let's do this. We will go to the news desk. We'll have a little bit of information that we have gathered that we shall then distribute so that you might take it to your peers and that all might become wiser because of it. Later on, Mr. Aaron Cronin, the man behind Cognition, Robot Uprise, the comic, also Hick Watch, Corpse Watch, and more. This, however, is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Lawmakers in the state of New York are going over the language in a bill that would legalize same-sex marriage. The measure appears to be one vote away from winning approval. Danny O'Donnell, New York's first openly gay state assemblyman, says it's an idea that's long overdue.
I think the polling has changed, and I think that even the Republicans understand that you don't want to be on the wrong side of history. The people who are opposed to same-sex marriage are yesterday's politicians. Tomorrow's politicians are ones who are in favor.
O'Donnell thinks that passage will happen soon.
Times have changed, and the polling data has changed, and now a vast majority of New Yorkers understand that this is a question of equality, which they haven't always been able to understand.
Well, that really is true. You don't want to be one of those. You don't want to be one of those like guys like Strom Thurmond who belong to the Klan or something, and then later on that sort of retrofits itself to become unacceptable. So
people, sir, really, no, people are okay with like blacks going to school with white people and black people and white people getting married. No, it's always been wrong and it always will be wrong. And my God says, no.
That's one of those things.
We're voting you out now.
You just never know when the context is going to change around you. So it's worth considering the shifting sands of time as you cast your votes.
I mean, first it's the Irish. you know, then it's black people, now gays. I mean, what's next, really?
I have no
robots.
Idea.
Robots. We're going to have to give rights to robots, which is against God's law.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why. Here's a little known fact. Here's a little known theory, which is believed to be fact, which I suspect is one of the one of the reasons why the Mormon Church is so opposed to gay marriage. Well, two reasons: A, because you got to procreate, because blah blah blah, the veil and blah blah blah. But also, the Mormon Church is so opposed to gay marriage because one of the reasons that the Mormon Church got rid of polygamy is because there's one of the teachings in the Mormon Church is that you are to obey the law of the land, which is the Mormon Church is very sort of weird and pragmatic. In that way, that they say, you know, above all else, before anything else, you should obey the law of the government, and that it is your duty as a good citizen and as a Mormon to be a good citizen and to follow the rules as laid down by your government.
Now, to be fair, they may have come up with that plan after being slaughtered wholesale by the locals on a couple of different occasions.
Who?
The Mormons.
Well, they came up with that plan because they were going to be denied statehood if they kept polygamy. But the reason that their justification for, let's have no illusions about this. The Mormons did their own fair share of slaughtering.
Oh, yes, they did.
But they were going to be denied statehood, and so they, you know, if they didn't get rid of polygamy, but their sort of justification for it was that to be a Mormon, one must be a good citizen. That means obeying the law of the land. And so that was how they explained it to the faithful. They said, well, look, you know, God wants us to follow the law of the land. The law of the land says no polygamy. Therefore, it is our duty to be good citizens and to get rid of polygamy. And so that's why they fought so hard against gay marriage in California a couple years back, because if gay marriage is legalized, I mean, really, and this is not one of those things that's like alarmist. I mean, just logically speaking, if you look at it from their point of view, they have this whole thing. Well, if you can marry a man, you could marry a goat. If you could marry a goat, you could. And whether or not that's crazy talk, they obviously believe it. And so from the Mormon Church's point of view, their whole thing is, well, if gay marriage is legal and if that makes it more likely that you could marry a goat and if that makes it more likely that you could, you know, that polygamy would become legal, then we would have to reverse our whole. And they've spent so many years trying to distance themselves from polygamy that the Mormon Church doesn't want anything to happen which in any way makes it more likely that polygamy would ever again be legal, because they would have to just turn this whole barge around, like, for the second time on that issue. So it's,
well, also in a more immediate sense, if they have to abide by the laws,
they'd
of
have
the
to
land,
allow gay Mormons to be married. Yeah,
exactly. They'd have to start, you know.
Yeah. So that
lessening
so
up on that,
they kind of paint themselves into a corner a little bit there by saying that one must obey Caesar's law as well as God's law. So, you know, it's all very interesting. But that seems like a thing that is just. It happens in fits and starts, but it is inevitable. I mean, there's just no getting around it.
A Seattle woman, I like this story because this story came very, very close to being a penis watch, except that the penis wasn't actually involved. A Seattle woman has been charged with third-degree assault / domestic violence after she allegedly squeezed her boyfriend's testicles so hard during a fight that he had to have surgery.
I hate you. I hate you so much. You know, I don't inflict stories like this on you. I don't sit over here and do like a clitoris watch. You know, where it's like, and then he had an acetylene torch.
I just read the news. I'm just bringing you the news.
I know. I just realized that we'd never said clitoris watch.
Yeah,
and so I wanted to.
No. But I get a lot of clitoris stories.
From Armani. What?
No. I was lobbying there for a while for a boob watch because we were having some boob stories.
This whole show is a boob watch.
Yeah, that's true. Jennifer Colon, 30, was arrested on May 24th after her boyfriend called 911 to report that she was being abusive, according to charges filed in King County Superior Court. The alleged victim, a 40-year-old man, told police the couple had argued and he had threatened to leave. When the man ignored Colon's apology, she grabbed his testicles and, quote, squeezed very hard, Seattle Police Detective Pilar Curtis wrote in a report. The man felt extreme pain, he said, and saw blood on his groin area. After the assault, Colon calmed down and began to clean the house as if nothing happened.
Jesus. Well, first of all, yeah. How would the, where would the blood have, I mean.
I'm wondering if she had nails, because he was taken to Northwest Hospital and Medical Center. This happened in Seattle. A doctor told police that the man's wound looked like a knife injury.
Jesus.
But neither the police nor the prosecutor
said. So maybe it was a grabbing and twisting and her nails dig into it or something?
Maybe something like that, yeah. In the 5 years the couple have been together, police have been called on other occasions because of alleged domestic violence. No arrests were made in any of the other incidents. Bail was set at $30,000 for Cologne in this incident, and she was released from jail.
Let me just speak for all men here. Here's the thing: as much as there's sort of, you know, the we have the penis watch, and something bad happened to the penis, and oh, she set fire to my penis, and oh, she cut off my penis with a weed whacker, and whatever. It really isn't the penis so much as it is the other area down there. It's your testicular area. That really is where that really is a much bigger bullseye in terms of just, you know, not only total area and coverage, you know, in some ways, but also just like in terms of the pain there. I mean, how do I put this? I think that I think I would speak for most men when I say that depending on what intimate activity one is involved in, I think the proximity of a woman's hands, teeth, anything else, mm-hmm. to that area is much more stress inducing than proximity to the actual penis itself. Hmm. That's a thing. The actual penis, I mean, because really what, you know, that's a thing that unless there's just a full-on biting and rending action, not a whole lot's going to happen there. The other thing is just like, you know, just an accidental like flip of the hand.
Oh, yeah.
Something gets bumped with an elbow. There's a whole lot of leather. The chin smacks something. It's just a whole lot of pain.
I mean, obviously I do not, you know, have testicles myself, but, you know, I'm married to someone who has them, and I've seen his reaction when just like the cat jumps unexpectedly onto his lap.
That's what I'm saying.
When he's laying on his back on the bed.
And that's not because the cat jumped on his penis.
No.
No, it's the other thing all the way around.
The cat's tiny little paws have landed directly on his balls. And I've seen him shoot up in the air and scream at the cat and call the cat a horrible little monster.
Yeah. No. All right.
It didn't look good. So I can imagine the squeezing and the twisting and the...
Okay, let's just...
Well, I have
something else.
Okay, I have a hick watch.
All right.
That could have been a taser watch, but instead I chose to make this.
You have a whole
watch.
Lot of things that could have been other things and then didn't.
I do. All right. It was a smorgasbord of things today.
All right, I'm going to take just a second here and just.
Oh, okay. Actually, let's hold on the hick watch, and we'll just go into something where someone doesn't get damaged.
Thank you. That's wonderful. By the way, on Twitter right now, describe your penis with a movie is trending.
Yeah, I saw a few of those. Some of those were quite funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Some sleep advocates call for later class schedules for college students, saying that they need to get more rest to study well. But U.S. researchers are now saying some students would just drink and sleep more if they were given later class schedules. The study led by lead author Pamela Thatcher at St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York, and co-author Serge Onaper found not only did later class start times predict more drinking and sleeping, but also lower grades overall. Later class start times seemed to change the choices students made, Thatcher said. They sleep longer and they drink more.
Well, of course.
Yes. Thatcher and Onaper said their study involved 253 college students who completed cognitive tasks and a one-week retrospective sleep diary, as well as questionnaires about sleep, class schedules, substance use, and mood.
What did they think was going to happen?
I really don't know. But apparently there have been some experts who have said that, you know, college students need more sleep, so therefore they should not take early morning classes. And so these guys say, you know what happened? Basically, the effects of later class start times might include more sleep, but this might be offset by lower quality sleep, you know, because they're hungover.
Were they thinking they would get up early and go to the gym and maybe, you know, do a few reps and then go back home and have a protein smoothie and then study?
I don't know.
No, that's a stupid idea.
These researchers speculated that drinking more alcohol, which is known to disrupt sleep, might reduce the benefits of getting more sleep.
It seems like that might be the case, yes. I mean, in some sort of theoretical capacity.
Yeah.
Jesus. This is like the idea that if somebody gets a raise, that somehow, that you know, that suddenly everything is going to be fine because they'll just be taking that additional money that they got and they'll just stick that in a sock somewhere. Mm. When in reality, it's like you just get a slightly larger sofa to sleep on. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program here at the Emerson News Network. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, today talking about America's Dad, Ed O'Neill. That is tomorrow on Humor Me, Comedy 101. By the way, I got a chance to thank Thomas Gill for this, and also I think I owe him $6 for bringing me a copy of the Ace Frehley solo album on vinyl, which is now decorating the right side of the studio there. By the way, the best of all the solo albums, incidentally. Gene Simmons being a close second. Paul Stanley being dead effing last, with songs such as Hold Me, Touch Me, Think of Me When We're Apart.
Oh.
That's what Paul does when left to his own devices. In any event, so the Ace Frehley solo album featuring hits such as Snowblind and Back in the New York Groove.
He's a star child.
He really is. You know what planet he's from?
No. Aestopia?
No, he's, would you, this, see, the thing is, this will never show up on Geek Trivia, though, probably, even though it should. You know, really, it's in case anybody ever asks you, Ace Frehley, from the planet Jendel.
Oh.
Just FYI. Okay. All right. Uh-huh. He explained one time in an early press release for KISS that the gravity on Earth was much lighter than that of his home world, which is how he does that thing where his guitar levitates into the rafters at the end of the show.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Now let's do our Hick Watch.
Let's see. We have a little bit of breaking music news that we'll get here in just a second. But let's do a Hick Watch first. Here's your Hick Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen
makes me feel so good. Here's your Hick Watch for Thursday.
What started as a dispute between neighbors in a San Antonio trailer park ended with a man assaulting his mother, then police using a taser on him to get him into custody. Police were called to the trailer park on Wednesday evening by a woman who said her neighbor had threatened her. Police arrived and said the man was inside his trailer holding a gun and a sword. Police said the man's mother came out of the trailer to talk to police, and officers thought the situation was about to end. But instead, the suspect's mother tried to get him out of the trailer, and he punched her in the face.
He had a gun and a sword.
He had a gun and a sword in his trailer.
All right.
Shortly after that, police said officers got the man to come outside, and they used a taser to take him into custody.
Well, of course. I mean, seriously, so you can't have a gun or and a sword. You can have one or the other and be causing a ruckus.
And don't be punching your mother in the face.
No, that's a thing that gets you an automatic tasing.
Yeah. So the mother suffered a cut to the face. Police said the man will face charges of family violence and deadly conduct.
Here's the thing: is like I don't understand where do these guys get all these swords? They can't all just be the state fair.
I think you can buy them on late night TV, can't you?
Do they just send you a sword in the mail, though? I mean, I know there's the knife guy.
No.
But this isn't the knife guy. This is the sword guy. And it's like,
they have all of those Vulcan-looking things at the cutlery places.
Well, you mean like the Batleth?
Yeah.
Or the Klingon thing? Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about, like you see those guys with samurai swords, and I don't think those guys all just went to Taipei. I just maybe I sound dense here, but I just don't know if they would mail you a sword, especially, I hate to say this, in this post 9/11 era, if they would just send you a sword in the mail.
I can't imagine they wouldn't.
I guess. I mean, maybe if you got the money.
Buy cutlery. You can buy great big giant like chef's knives and stuff through the mail. So.
Well, I guess. But I mean, it's like, well, that's a fair point, I guess. I mean, yeah, well, okay. There you go. Not that I even really want a sword. I'm just sort of curious about the whole thing. Let's see. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. That's your Hick Watch for Thursday.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
It's interesting how pretty much any story that involves a guy punching his mother in the face, the odds are high it will take place in a trailer park.
Yeah, and also that the cops are just, you know, that's a guy that's not going to get cut a lot of slack when they find the shoot. Punch your moms. let's see. What do we? Oh, so we'll get some breaking music news here in a second, which is interesting. I don't know if it's exciting is the right way to put it. Our friend Jesus in the OC just tipped us to something. Somebody has asked. And now people are asking all these questions about the KISS. Somebody's asking about the Peter Criss song, That's the Kind of Sugar Papa Likes. That, I believe, is not on his, that is not on his 70, that is not on his KISS solo album. I believe That's the Kind of Sugar Papa Likes is on his, that is on his 1980 solo album, Out of Control, which he released after leaving KISS, which is dreadful, by the way, just FYI. Here's a side observation, though. I wanted to play something for you because this is I was just mentioning the KISS solo albums, and I've talked about all the various genres, you know, that KISS tried and failed at. Like they had a bad prog rock album, and they had several bad disco albums, and they had a bad new wave album, and they had a terrible grunge album called Carnival of Souls that came out in like, which is like Carnival of Suck. It came out in 1995 or something. And then, of course, we played many times. We played that Gene Simmons version of When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah.
This, though, is something Let's see if I can find this. The notable thing about this is because Cher is on this. So this is from 1978. This is Gene Simmons and Cher. I won't play the whole thing, but I'll just do the hook. This is called Living in Sin. I'm living in sin. Let me see. It's the... about a youngish girl. And you build up your nerve, and then you call.
You know, if you sent this in as a demo to someone, they would just throw it in the trash.
That really is true. I mean, there's just no getting around the fact that some of these are, they're ill-conceived or half-formed. I'm living in sin at the Holiday Inn. Yeah. I mean, it's like it is full on smell the glove rock.
Oh my God,
I mean,
that's horrible.
Living in sin at the Holiday Inn. Living in sin. I'm living in sin at the Holiday Inn. At the Holiday Inn. Living in sin. You tell me. Now let's see. Let's see if I can find the part, the actual share section of this. There we go.
Hello.
This is Gene answering the phone, of course. So there you go. So that's, so that's the sort of thing that the members of KISS do when left to their own devices, when there's no cooler head in the studio to tell them that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Here's a little bit of breaking music news, by the way. So this is speaking of... Okay, now I stand corrected. Apparently, That's the Kind of Sugar Papa Likes is the last song on Peter Criss's 1978 KISS solo EP, so I'm confusing Peter Criss solo albums. Which, let's be honest, I don't own any of them, and neither do you. No one does. Not even Peter Criss. So let's see, we've got... by the way, can I tell you this? We did this back some years ago on another iteration of the program. I did this... we were giving away tickets to something or other. We might have been giving away copies of the new Peter Criss solo album, which I don't own. But we did a Is It Spinal Tap or Is It Gene Simmons in terms of the lyrics. Gene Simmons, who has, I swear to God, written and sung such lyrics as Let Me Put My Log in Your Fireplace, Love's Like a Muscle and You Make Me Want to Flex, Love's Like a Glove, Baby, It Fits So Right, although I think that might have been Paul. And on this song called... I think it's called Spit, but the which itself is sort of great. But the Gene actually sings. I mean, straight-facedly, there's no indication that he is aware that he is singing this lyric the way that we all hear it. There's a song on the KISS album called Revenge where I swear to Christ, Gene actually sings the lyric: "The bigger the cushion, the better the pushing."
Wow.
Most definitely, he says, "I want a whole lot of woman." I think maybe the name of the song. Anyway, a little bit of breaking music news. Rock is stupid, is the thing. And that's what makes it great, but let's have no doubts that it's stupid. This is breaking news. This is, again, interesting. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. It's just... it is sort of intriguing. Let me ask you this right now. I don't know. There's a musical duet that has been put down. Two artists. One is a group. One is an individual. They have recorded apparently a full-length album together. Do you want the group... and then I'll have you guess the individual, or do you want the individual, you can guess the group?
Give me the group, and I'll see if I can guess the individual.
Metallica and Blank.
Justin Bieber.
Metallica and Blank have recorded a full-length 10-track album together. No release date as of yet, but the album is finished. Consists of 10 tracks.
Is this person male or female?
Male.
Are they someone who is not known for anything kind of like hard metal sort of music?
They're not known for metal.
Okay.
They're not a heavy metal artist. They're not a Metallica's genre.
I can't guess. I mean,
you're terrible at this. You've got to ask additional
questions. Neil Diamond.
Okay, you see, you're guessing all. Oh. No, does no one know how to guess? You ask a series of narrowing.
Oh, all right.
Because otherwise, you're Dave Brubeck.
He is a rock and roll person, though.
He is a rock artist.
Is he an older rock artist?
Yes.
Is he someone who has been in a number of bands, or is he known for just one band?
He is primarily known for one band, then for being a solo artist.
Does he still have a successful solo career now?
I would say so, in the sense that people certainly know who he is. He didn't have a lot of hits, you know, but people are certainly, you mentioned, people go, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Wow. Because I was thinking somebody like Sammy Hagar, and it's like, that's not going to happen.
I would say he's not as mainstream successful as Sammy Hagar is, but I would say that he is well known. He is well known to, I would say, almost all rock fans. I would say that you're a fan.
Oh,
you're
wow.
A fan, certainly of the band, and probably of some of his solo work.
Jesus.
We have played him on the
Mike
show.
Ness.
No, but you see, you're on the right track. We have played some of his solo work on the show within the last week.
Not what's his name?
Not that guy.
Not your guy.
Not who's it?
Not your favorite guy from The Refreshments.
No, not Roger Klein.
Not Roger Klein.
I don't even know how that would work. Not Ringo Starr either. Quit being a wise ass.
Okay, I'm going to have to give up. I know I narrowed it down pretty good, but I got to give up.
File the sender. Here's one nobody expected. Pitchfork.com is reporting that Metallica and Lou Reed.
Whoa!
Have gotten together and recorded an entire collaborative full-length album. Metallica announced this on their website yesterday.
Wow.
The LP does not have a title or release date, but they have finished recording. They have finished recording it last week. It is at least 10 songs long. So there you go. Metallica and Lou Reed.
Oh, that's...
That's not a thing you expected. That really isn't...
I just can't imagine that.
No, I... And yet,
those are two things that just don't go together.
Well, you know, Kiss did like an album with Bob Dylan that has never been released. And although I guess, again, no release date, so maybe they just recorded it and they're not even sure if anybody wants to hear that.
You know, there was a time I would not have imagined that Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach would be good together either. But,
yeah.
So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, well, okay. So there you go. All right, there's a little breaking news there for you. That is courtesy of our friend Jesus in the OC. So, fantastic. We should take a little break here. We'll come back after this. We got Mr. Aaron Cronin. He's going to be here to talk about his new comic, Cognition, The Robot Uprise. Later on, we have a corpse watch still, and you know, and merriment of innumerable varieties. Stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues next, right here at the Emerson News Network. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You don't know.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And whites with clubs, fighting at Howl Beach. There's no such thing as human rights when you walk the New York streets. A cop was shot in the head by a 10-year-old kid named Boot in Central Park last week. The fathers and daughters lined up by the coffins by the statue of bigotry. Hey, you better hold on. Something happening here. You better hold on. Well, I'll meet you at Tompkins Square. The dopey sent a message to the cops last week and they shot him in the car where he sat. And Eleanor Bumpus and Michael Stewart must have appreciated that. There's a rampaging rage rising up like a plague of bloody vials washing up on the beach. It'll take more than the angels or I and Mike Tyson to heal this bloody breach. Hey, hey, you better hold on. Or something's happening here. You better hold on. I'm gonna meet you in Tompkins Square. A junkie ran down a lady, a pregnant dancer. She'll never dance, but the baby was saved. He shot up some China white and nodded out at the wheel, and he doesn't remember a thing. They shot that old lady cause they thought she was a witness to a crime she didn't even see. Whose home is the home of the brave by the statue of bigotry. Hey, better hold on. Something's happening here. You better hold on. There's a riot in Tompkins Square. You got a black 38 and a gravity knife. You still have to ride the train. There's the smelly essence of New York down there, but you ain't no Bernard Getz. There's no mafia lawyer to fight in your corner for that 15 minutes of fame. The have and have nots are bleeding in the tub. That's New York's future, not mine. Oh, you better hold on. Or something's happening here. You better hold on. If ever something's happening here.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Mr. Aaron Cronin. He is the author, co-creator, overlord, master, maven, raconteur behind Cognition, The Robot Uprise. The signing slash release is coming up this Sunday, 5 p.m. Bridge City Comics, followed by an after party at Mississippi Studios. So we'll have more details on that here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. Before we do any of that, let's go to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A man was rushed to the hospital Wednesday after being bitten by his venomous pet snake. The snake bit the tip of John Post's finger at his home in Kissimmee, Florida. The African puff adder is one of the most venomous snakes in the world. Post was rushed to Osceola Regional Medical Center in Kissimmee, where he was given anti-venom from Reptile World Serpentarium.
Serpentarium?
It says Serpentarium.
Is that like an arboretum?
I guess.
But more snaky?
Serpentarium.
Okay.
In St. Cloud, Florida.
Here's the thing. Nobody knows the words. You can just bluff your way through it.
Serpentarium. I'll just say that.
For all your serpent needs. Wait, hold on. Say that again.
Serpentarium.
Okay. There you go.
Sunday. His wife says he's in stable condition. He's been transferred to Orlando Regional Medical Center, where he spent a couple of days. His neighbors never even knew there were dangerous snakes inside the home across the street.
He seemed like a quiet, non-serpent-owning man.
His neighbor, Colette Ezell, said, "It's a quiet neighborhood. We've got dogs and turtles and that kind of stuff.
Or we used to.
But nothing like snakes. Certainly not a snake that's going to harm somebody."
No, of course not. That's not really a thing that you anticipate.
Yes. According to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the puff adder is responsible for more fatalities each year than any other snake in Africa.
It's like being bitten by a fat Rowan Atkinson. Hey, now!
Whoa!
Yeah. All right. I wasn't prepared for the...
The bone!
There you go. I wasn't prepared for the bone reference right there.
No.
Right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's do one more here, and then we will welcome to the program Mr. Aaron Cronin. Do you have the...
Corpse Watch?
Corpse Watch. Do you have the story about the House of Snakes?
That's right. It's another snake.
As though they were living in Satan's lair, I think is how it was described. I may have that if you don't.
Okay.
Or we can try to get it later.
Someone did send it to me, but let's do it later.
Okay. Well, Russell, let's do one more here, and then we'll...
Let's do the Corpse Watch, and we'll get to the snake story later.
Excellent. Here is your Corpse Watch for Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
I would like to first send out props to Laura Italiano and William Gorda, who of the New York Post, who are responsible for the fine, fine writing in this story.
Are you being sarcastic?
One corpse was left under a Brooklyn bed. Another, his own grandmother's, was stuffed into a clothes closet in Harlem. Bodies seemed to turn up hither and yon in the wake of Larry Davis, who pleaded not guilty in Manhattan today to charges that he killed Cora Davis, 76, and stuffed her in a bedroom closet in March. In a police confession released today after he was arraigned on manslaughter and assault charges, Davis, 22, admitted to being just a little emotionally disorganized when it came to figuring out what best to do with a dead person. "I was freaking out," he told cops. "I never saw a dead body before in my life." Brooklyn authorities might quibble over that. While Davis was in jail last month on his granny sleigh, they busted him for the August 19th strangulation murder of Richard McCoy, whose body had been stashed under a bed. "At this point, I decided to put Grandma in her closet," his confession continued. "I had so many emotions going on in my head that I can't explain why putting Grandma in the closet was the best thing."
Nobody puts Grandma in the closet.
He'd been arguing with the frail woman over why she wouldn't give him any cash, and he had angrily, quote, bumped her on the right shoulder, causing her to crash fatally to the floor. "I put Grandma in head first into the closet and folded her legs up so she can fit in the closet," he explained. He later partied in the same bedroom with two buddies and a girlfriend.
Is this like when my sister again would talk about, or my parents frequently talk about, give me a lub tap, you know, which is sort of where they would hold me down and just sort of pummel me?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, okay. He bumped her.
Bodies turning up hither and yon. There's just the two, right?
Right. I don't think that's actually hither and yon.
It's not like it's the bone field or something out there.
No. Right. By the way, today is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day.
Okay.
So hooray. I hope I didn't get you a present.
Was he? No. Well, I mean, really, this story is present enough, Dawn. It's informative and entertaining. So he claimed that he just bumped her and then she just sort of fell apart.
Right.
She was sort of shoddily constructed.
And then he didn't know what to do. So he went, I just put her in a closet. And then my buddies came over and we smoked some weed and hooray. Where's your grandma? In the closet.
To be fair, you know, we've talked about this before. If you were just confronted with, you know, a dead body, it's not like you would necessarily know what to do with it right off. I mean, you might be able to figure it out eventually, but you're not really prepped for that.
Most of us don't really have a contingency plan in place.
No, it's one of those things that just, you know, it's sort of that's a bit of an ad hoc learning process, I think. There's your Corpse Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Things that's better left alone. alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Fantabulous. No, I should have gone this way. You were talking about the Puff Adder, and I went, you know, is that a fat Rowan Atkinson? Seamus was much more, he was much quicker on the draw. He said, Puff Adder, is that the black Rowan Atkinson? Zam.
Yeah. Also, kudos to the New York Post for giving this story the headline, Serial Corpse Stasher Pleads Not Guilty to Sticking Grandma's Bloody in Her Closet.
So, okay, well, you can't
hard to say. I can't say it, but I like it.
The headline is certainly informative. You can't claim that they've obfuscated the contents of the story with that.
No.
Speaking of guy, I was just going to try to do like a corpse hiding segue, and I realized that was just going to be ill-fated, so I decided to pull the plug on that early. I will just say this: our next guest is the author of Cognition, The Robot Uprise, a comic whose first issue is already receiving extraordinary acclaim. The release happens this Sunday, June 19th, 5 p.m. Bridge City Comics, with an after party to follow at Mississippi Studios. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, Mr. Aaron Cronin. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Okay, so you go home, there's a dead body sitting on the couch. You didn't kill the guy, but you don't want the man to find out about it. What do you do? And I'm not talking about in like some alternate universe or somebody else's house. You go home to your house today, body
I
there.
Dig a deep, deep hole.
Where?
That's a good question. Someplace far away, probably out by Oregon City.
Do you have a vehicle that could transport said body?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not like you have to borrow a truck from a friend or something. You got a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually have the seats out of my back right now.
Really?
I could move a body right now.
Just FYI,
Just in case.
I might be placing a Craigslist ad right now, just see if you can make a little money on that, as long as that's the case. So we were tipped off to this there was something on Facebook about it, and it's been gotten a lot of online exposure, and Willamette Week had a nice piece about it today. Court and Bobby, you were on with Court and Bobby earlier this week, and there's been a lot of sort of advanced buzz about Cognition. Cognition is about Sid, who is a robot who has or achieves at least self-awareness and has what we might call malevolent intentions toward the human race. But it's a lot more than that from what I've seen, and I have not read the entire thing because I think only a few pages have been made available so
Correct.
Far.
Right.
But it's more than just the standard robot that has some kind of self-awareness story, which is a thing that has been done before, but often in a not very interesting way. You seem to depict Sid as more of a fully formed individual. What was the reason? What was the inspiration for that?
It was born from I actually was first inspired to start writing music about using a vocoder because I love Cylons, and I was watching a dance show, and I had this idea of this like really sad robot. Like the sound effect was there because he was a sad robot, and then eventually he is the robot that gets pissed off and decides to destroy the world. And what came out of this was the whole story of this consciousness. Like in the story, the robots are split into two. There's the ones that have been programmed. They're AI. They're highly functional. It's 50 years from now. And there's these guys, which are called COGs, or cognitive robots. And it's this black box consciousness module that allows for an artificial consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's not programmed. So they have to learn. And they're basically tabula rasa as far as like their behavior patterns. So he has been raised very in a loving environment by the gentleman that invented the technology, as compared to the other robots, some of whom have been raised in less warm environments and behave accordingly.
Was the musical component of this always, that was part of it from the beginning, the idea, because Sid the robot himself actually is a musician.
Yes.
Actually creates music, which is a thing, and the ostensible band or group or music of Sid has been performed publicly, has it
not? Yes, yes.
Was that a thing you had from the very beginning, the idea of then there'd be a comic and there'll be a robot and then we're going to have the robot band actually perform somewhere? It'll be awesome.
You know, it kind of melded together because I started off just doing the music and playing. I played with bands like, can we swear on here? You know, Star Effer.
Star Effer, that's Star well Effer. Done, sir.
I played with some of the guys from that, and I wanted to start doing these images that would go along with each song, because in my mind there were set pieces. Every song comes from a set piece. It's either a plot point or it's the robot himself performing something. And I met Matthew, who is Matt Hopkins, who unfortunately can't be here today.
He's the visual artist.
He is the artist. He is phenomenal. I'm so happy I met him a year ago. And I just wanted to have him draw some stuff. And he was like, no, this should be a comic book. And I was like, okay. So we started developing the comic book. And I kind of put aside, I never let the music die, but we've been focusing on the comic book. And then every now and then I'd pop out a new song. And
is there going to be an album or a set of songs released to accompany the comic, like a soundtrack?
There will be. As a matter of fact, for this comic, there is one song that is available. It's called Red Laser Eye, and you can download it off our website. I have to make it free. Right now, you have to pay like 80 cents, but once people start this weekend, you can just go on and download it. And so it goes along with every issue will have one to two songs associated with it. And so by the time we're done with the first 6-issue arc, we'll have like an album that can go, that can accompany the story.
Does the story Discognition have a set endpoint to you, or when you say a first 6-issue arc, is that like an act?
Yeah, we have, it's a 3-act story arc that we're looking at. We're looking at doing 18 issues out, all told. You know, who knows what'll come of it.
And this is it is, in the truest sense of the word, this is an independent project. I mean, this is you and Matt. I mean, this is, you guys are doing this yourself, you know, kind of bootstrapping it, as they say.
Yeah.
Is that because it was just easier to do it that way rather than pounding the pavement trying to find, you know, a company or distributor? Or did you just say, like, I don't want anybody screwing with my stuff. I'm just going to do it myself.
It really started just from, it's harder to explain it to anybody. I mean, it's kind of an elaborate story. Even just getting people to come out and see the robot show, which is why I was like, you have to see it live because you don't
hear that about a comic book very often.
It's true. I mean, the comic was easy to pitch. People were like, oh, that sounds cool. But, you know, it's an intricate story with certain elements that I think people make, they jump to conclusions and they don't quite get. So I was just like, I think we should just let it speak for itself and see what kind of response we get. So we went to Emerald City Comic Con with 10 pages, and we got really cool response.
Now, when you take 10 pages to Comic Con, is that 10 pages that you're just, are they sort of, is it like a handout, or are you showing it? Is there like a presentation you do, or how
do
you show?
I did a video. There's a video actually on our website that's kind of like a teaser trailer.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I did that in After Effects. We did a video, played that, and then ran, and then had like little mini books that we're handing out, like ash cans, and just took names. People signed up for the email.
I am intrigued by your comic and would like to know more about it. Please contact me.
And so where we're at now is it's kind of a rub. This took us Matt had to draw a lot. You know, it's kind of, you know, as a writer, I can probably knock out an issue in a week, and you know, if I was really not doing anything else, and he's if not faster, he's got to spend 8 to 14 hours per page drawing, and we've got 20 pages in here. We actually shaved it down, and I mean he was sweating himself for the last 2 months, and unless we can get him so he can come off his full day job, it's going to be a kind of a tedious process. So I got to figure out a way to fund it. That's kind of where we're at right now.
I remember when I was a kid, I wrote a letter to Mad Magazine one time, and it was one of the many, many things that I no longer have. We'll just put it that way. And but I wrote, and I think I was basically just looking for a question to ask as an excuse to write to Bill Gaines, who published Mad. And I said, so I'm a big fan of your magazine. How long does it take to put together, you know, an issue of Mad Magazine or an article? I love, you know, thanks, Rick. And they wrote back, and Gaines himself actually wrote back to me, but he said, well, you know, it was the same thing. He said, well, you know, a writer, you know, can, like with a movie parody, a writer could knock that out in like, you know, 10 days, 12 days, something like that. And then he said that, you know, the artist took, you know, from 8 to 10 weeks to illustrate it. And I was like, that's impossible. Nothing would take. Just draw it. Because I have no artistic ability. So, of course, it seems, on the one hand, impossibly difficult to me. But it seems easy for them the way I look at it. I'm like, well, you can draw. Just draw it. Just get it done. But finding a graphic artist, you know, that shares your vision and knows how you're going to do it. I mean, it must be very difficult. We hear from people all the time that have, you know, the script, or they have a script for a comic book, or they just can't find the other person. They can't find the artist. How'd you guys meet?
He is an actor, and actually, I don't know if you've heard of Follow the House.
I don't believe I have.
They would do these serialized every weekend. They would have a new episode for 4 weeks, and it was really funny. It was like, and most of it was ad lib. And he was one of the guys playing a comic artist on the thing. And he had this a drawing of like a superhero. And I saw him after the show. I was like, who drew that? He's like, I did. And I was like, oh, well, hey, I would be interested in hiring. I was going to pay him to draw like some posters. And that's when he pitched me on I remember it was April 21st last year. He's like, let's make a comic book. And I was like, okay, let's do that. I don't know that, you know, I really hadn't read that many comics. I read, you know, my fair share as a kid in sci-fi and stuff, but I hadn't been in the industry for a while.
Is this your first foray to making an actual comic book?
Oh, yeah.
Really? What had you done?
And the art here, by the way, is spectacular.
It's fantastic. It really is beautiful. It is,
Thank you. Matt thanks you.
It has a real kineticism to it. It feels like the handful of things that I've seen, it seems like you get the sense of action from it. What had you done that approached this level? Had you written shorter versions or short stories?
I had written short stories. I actually had written, one of the first things I did was I wrote dialogues between the characters two Christmases ago. I had this vision of, you know, the robot. I get into some pretty heavy, I mean, I try to keep it fun. This thing has gotten a life of its own, though. It's like there's themes that come through, like he's obsessed with death because
the robot.
Yeah, and like there's a song that's on the website called The Nothing that seems to be everyone's kind of like go-to like favorite. And it's about him contemplating the fact that if you switch him off, he's gone. And he thinks that because he's either on or off, that humans have this like kind of continuous consciousness,
right,
like that might point towards some sort of afterlife. So he's a little freaked out by his existential issues.
A lot of times you'll hear artists talk about, and writers specifically talk about, the whole concept of writing with the door closed, which is where you're not letting the outside world sort of see or have input on what you're doing until it's done. You know, you got to get it done and get it down on the page in the first draft until it's locked. And then you can kind of show people, because you don't want to sort of dilute the purity of, you know, what you see in your head. But that must be harder when you're working with an artist. How does it, at what stage do you show him stuff and then say, so draw your little pictures to go with this?
Yeah. He and I sat down and mapped out the entire arc, like all
together,
all three acts. Yeah. And I mean, I knew exactly where I want the story to go. And that's always been my vision. But it was like, you know, he's an avid comic reader, too. And he's got a kind of strong opinions on what makes stories go well and what makes them not. And so, you know, definitely been involved together as sort of honing this. So what I would come at him and say, so here's the things that I think that need to happen in this story, and here's the dialogue. And I wrote a whole script out, panels and everything, and then he came to it. And, you know, I'll just give him beats. I don't like to see a lot of text in mm-hmm. any one place, so I'm very particular about breaking the dialogue up, keeping the flow going. And then he'll draw it the way he envisions it, and it always is better than I expect. And then I just kind of rehammer the dialogue back into the scene so that it makes sense.
So you talked about this being your first foray to making comics, you know, certainly making a full-fledged standalone comic like this. And I don't know what experience he had, but I mean, you must have, for good and bad, had no idea what you were getting into when you started it, right? I mean, it seems like you probably just figured, well, there's, you know, that way there'll be dragons, but we'll handle them when we get there. You just probably didn't even know what was on the horizon. Did you ever reach a point where you're just like, why did I decide to do this?
No. This has been the most fun I've ever had. I've written a lot of like shorts and scripts and things like that. And where I'm always, and I love sci-fi, so I'm always writing in something that I'm like, how are we ever going to do that? And it's kind of limiting. And this, I'm like, okay. And then they blow up a building and he can draw that like he drew them at the kitchen table. And so there's no limit to what can happen in the story. I can make it happen. We're actually talking to a troupe in town that does stage shows, and they want to do the musical again. And I'm like, oh, now we got to strip it back down.
Right.
So I got to take away all the big stuff and strip it back down for stage.
For somebody who, because there's, you know, in a city like Portland especially, there's always a jillion people out there who've got, I have an idea for a comic book. I've been meaning to do one of them. Or just somebody who really is like looking at the first, you know, like they want to do something like this. What was the biggest issue or the biggest question or the biggest challenge that you just didn't anticipate? Something kind of came out of nowhere and you went, oh my God, how do we, whatever.
One is printing. Just to get the small batch printed, it's really expensive. And, you know, I knew there were going to be errors or things we wanted to change, so I didn't want to commit to a big chunk of books. And then even if I do that, I mean, I don't have distribution yet. We've got every store in town, specifically, you know, I got to credit Bridge City Comics for being the first person to just say, we'll help you out.
Right.
They've been awesome. And very, very straightforward about how hard it is to make money. And also very straightforward about, you know, but very encouraging of like, you know, I've seen a lot of crap and this is good and I think you should come in and do this. And he's like, but it's going to be a struggle.
Did you ever, was there any thought to just doing like a digital distribution, or was it always that this is going to be a print, this is going to be a thing you can hold in your hand?
I really, you know, having been on the cusp, I really like comics in print. And I, you know, I just, there's something about it. And I, we will absolutely have to pursue digital because print is very expensive and the margins are low, and it's moving that to digital. But I think people still go to comic stores. I mean, the numbers are shrinking, but I see people that have boxes, and friends of mine that are, you know, grown-ass adults still getting comic books.
Right.
And yeah, I can't predict. I don't understand how that market's going to go. I'm just along for the ride. I feel like I'm really like that the story. I would love to do as much as we can with this particular story and push it, keep pushing it.
We're talking with Mr. Aaron Cronin, the comic Cognition, The Robot Uprise. The release and signing are happening this coming Sunday, the 19th, at 5 p.m. at Bridge City Comics, followed by the after party at Mississippi Studios. Are you a comic book guy in the sense that this is kind of, all things being equal, this is kind of what you want to do? Or is it just that this was how this particular story needed to be told, in your opinion, and so that's why this medium?
I going into this, I probably never had considered writing a comic book. I absolutely love doing this right now. Like I said, it's the most freeing. I mean, Matt and I have got a couple other things cooking in our heads that we'd like to be able to do. So we're really trying to just really buckle down on this one and see if we can get her to take root, and then see what else we can develop.
Well, it also sounds like you got very, very lucky in finding a terrific artist that you work with well, because I've known a number of people who have decided they wanted to tell a story through comics, and they've hooked up with an artist and didn't really go very, very well. So it sounds like you've got like an
so
excellent
lucky
working relationship.
And that's why it's like it's some. I liken it to like when I met my wife, that it just felt right. Like Matt and I got along really well, and when we went to Seattle, we were in the room for 4 days together, and you put two guys in a room that, you know, we worked together, but you get to know a man, and then you're in a hotel room for three, 4 days. And I was like, where are they going to come out? Best friends or bitter enemies? And so far we are friends.
And it seems the thing I hear a lot, and I think this is probably true, is that you, if you're working with somebody like a creative partner on this or anything, that sometimes I'll hear people say that there isn't so much like a sort of click in your head when you know that it's the right person, but that you definitely know when it's the wrong person. You can tell when you are trying to force yes. something, or when you're trying to, you know, marry somebody's artistic style that you're writing somewhere, and it's just not working.
Yeah.
Oh, don't I know it?
Yes. It's a living hell here every day.
Yeah, I've tried that with music because I've pretty much hit my limit on, I think, what I need to get working with other people for the music. There's a lot of songs that need to be written. And I mean, I can keep writing the things, but I need somebody to help me write with them. And I've tried to meld with people that I like their stuff or I like them, and it just doesn't work. It's a real chemistry that you got to find.
From the minute that you sat down and started writing this in earnest, you're like, that's it. You know, you have to imagine, like, we're gonna make this into a comic. From that day until the day it was done, ready, you could hold it in your hand, how long?
1 year.
1 year, so, which is, I mean, and that seems like it's probably a pretty fast turnaround for comics. I don't really know.
Maybe 1 year and 2 months.
Yeah, so it's that par for the course, or is that faster than average? I have no idea. I guess maybe there's not a lot of benchmarks to compare it to.
I mean, honestly, Matt didn't start drawing in earnest until September, and then we had to undo 5 pages because we changed the style, and he had to go back to a different style. So he actually had to draw a lot more pages, and I'm sure he trashed stuff I never even saw. He's so meticulous about things. That he will keep redrawing the same thing, and I just have to be like, I'm kind of a project manager, just be like, stop, that's good,
done.
Yeah.
Somebody asks here, what is a vocoder? A vocoder is a vocal processing device that you. The Cylons, I guess, is that how they make
yes,
the Cylon voice?
It is how they make the Cylon voice.
Also, if anybody's familiar with the Pink Floyd album Animals, it is the sound that it's the sound they use on the song Dogs. That gives you sort of a weird, wavery, warbly kind of trill to your voice.
There's a lot of different waveforms you can use for it.
Yeah.
They also use it, the Daft Punk song. That one, they use it a lot.
Yeah, when you hear that Around the World song or whatever, it's that too. Is this, so the hero, the character, Sid, is there a point in the creative process and the writing process of this where you stop thinking about it as a character or a thing that you have created, and that it becomes a thing that you a thing that almost does exist, and you're simply chronicling what he is doing? Does that moment happen as an author for you?
It has felt like that from the moment I started this. I have ADD with projects. I would come up with an idea, I'd start to write something, I'd move on. I usually have like 5 things in rotation, and as soon as I came up with this, it was like 2 years ago, maybe it was even longer than that. I sat down, I wrote the first song, which is Robot Uprise, and it has been. It's so cliche though, but I seriously feel like I'm channeling it. It's weird, and I am obsessive about it. That's why it feels right. Like meeting Matt, it being the thing, I've enjoyed this. Even if it died on the vine, I would be absolutely thrilled that I did this.
Keith Richards sometimes talks about the idea that he said that the guitar is the antenna, and he just happened to be the one holding it when the song sort of flitted by, you know, and it just happened to hit his guitar, and he was like, I was just the one that happened to be there.
Well, I think there's something to that, just in the collective consciousness, not in that Jungian, like we're all type, but maybe, I don't know. I don't know where it comes from, but I think if you put enough variables that are the same in front of people, they will come to the same sort of conclusion. And if you look at the fact, you know, Daniel Wilson, at the same time that I started writing Robot Uprise, I kept coming across his stuff, and he lives in town, and he wrote How to Survive a Robot Uprising. And now he's come out with his book, Robopocalypse. And, you know, there's something going on. Robots are bubbling up. Maybe it's because we've completely...
Well, there is a collective zeitgeist. I mean, you know, and that's why, again, we move from, you know, the zombie to ninja to robot to clown to chicken to pirate to whatever. And there is, and it's what Stephen King also calls the buried fossil, you know, syndrome. That the idea that there are things, again, not in some weird hippie trippy way, but just that because humans have, to some degree, a shared experience, and we have a shared, we all exist within the same set of variables on the planet, more or less, that given the same kind of input, we were all going to come up with the same handful of outcomes. So maybe, and you know, maybe, who knows, maybe it was, and it might have just been time. Cameron Crowe's talked about an idea that gets in the air, and it just is out there, and it's a question of who kind of grabs it, you know, and sometimes multiple people do.
And that's why I was trying to move as fast as humanly possible. Yeah. While I'm sitting in my basement writing this stuff, I was like, there have got to be like 20 other people doing exactly what I'm doing, and or not exactly, but something very similar. So move.
It's just from what I've seen of it, it looks to be just a great idea and a great book. It's Cognition, The Robot Uprise. The signing and release is going to be happening this Sunday, 5 p.m., Bridge City Comics, followed by a release party, then after party at the Mississippi Studios. Final question before we go. I am always, you talked about being, you know, somewhat of a comics fan, but just a huge sci-fi fan. I'm always curious about what is the very first thing that kind of grabbed you and sparked your imagination when, however old you were, the first thing that made you want to create stuff?
Well, it made me want to create stuff. You know, it had to have been like Battlestar and Star Wars. From the first time I got my hands on a video camera, I just started making little stop action movies and stuff.
With like the Kenner, you know, sort of frame by frame moving the, did you keep any of those?
I've got all of that stuff.
Excellent.
I was just over at Billy Galaxy's store, and I was looking through there. I'm like, I have like all this crap in my attic still.
Are the one guy. You and Billy are the only two people. Billy makes it. He has an entire empire just built on people who had that stuff and don't. So.
My mom sold all of my Transformers. That was the one thing. For $10, she sold a box of Transformers, and I can never forgive her for that.
Yeah, mine. It was a brown paper bag with my Star Wars stuff stapled, and then $5 written on the front of it.
Oh my God!
Came back home. Mom, what happened? My Star Wars. Oh, I sold that at a garage sale. So that is there's a documentary in the work. You know, there's got to be like in that right there, just a whole documentary about my mom sold all my Star Wars crap or whatever. Aaron Cronin, along with Matthew Hopkins, is the man behind Cognition, The Robot Uprising. Find out more. What is the website for this?
Cognitioncomic.com. And you can also get to it through robotuprise.com.
So cognitioncomic.com, robotuprise.com, and that's going to be happening this Sunday, 5 p.m. Not the actual Robot Uprise, just the release. It's going to be happening at Bridge City Comics this Sunday, 5 p.m., followed by the after party at Mississippi Studios.
It could be the Robot Uprise.
Well, I mean, who knows? That would be, I mean, really, that in a way would work out well for you as long as there's some press there to chronicle the whole thing.
We're encouraging costumes at the concert, by the way.
Awesome.
There will be laser beams.
Thank you for spending some time with us. Best of continued success in all things, my friend. This is
Thank
fantastic.
You.
Good luck. Mr. Aaron Cronin, ladies and gentlefolk, we're going to do this. We'll be back on the other side. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. listening to the Emerson News Network.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know what it one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History. Yeah, but I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964 and so forth. By the way, apparently the vocoder, now this may or may not be true, apparently the vocoder was invented by Bob Heil of Heil Microphones. And, of course, and I completely forgot this, of course, the best pop culture reference ever for the vocoder is that goddamn Frampton Comes Alive album. Almost proud I didn't think of that. And so forth. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. Be here with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, talking about America's dad, Mr. Ed O'Neill. Everything I say sounds so much more epic over this. I feel like I'm wandering the streets of Manhattan, a man on the go, seeing things, doing stuff, taking meetings.
Wearing platform shoes.
Having a hot dog. Well, that too. What? Okay. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Dateline Tokyo. A 55-year-old jobless Japanese man was arrested in Tokyo for having three schoolgirls spit out saliva and filming them in the process.
I hate you.
Toshihiko Mizuno was caught in Tokyo yesterday on suspicion of habitual indecency, which carries a penalty of up to 1 year in jail or a fine of 1 million yen, which would be $12,400.
And so what is it? He wasn't, they weren't spitting on him, though. It was, they were just spitting like on the sidewalk and he was filming it?
Pretty much, yeah. He separately approached three girls aged 9 and 10 in October and December last year outside apartment towers in the street saying, "I am doing research on saliva. Give me your saliva.
Give me your saliva."
He videotaped them as they spat out saliva. He also asked them to open their mouths and filmed the interiors of their mouth and tongues.
Well, he didn't take it home with him, at least, because that would be a little odd.
The Metropolitan Police Department spokesman said he has done so habitually to satisfy his sexual desire.
Yeah, so they arrested him for what?
Habitual indecency.
Well, I mean, I guess, see, that's the sort of thing you probably couldn't get arrested for in America, because it's just habitual creepiness.
Media reports quoting police sources say that Mizuno had approached about 4,000 young girls and managed to collect saliva from about 500 of them over 17 years in Tokyo. No,
but that makes total sense because that is the 10-2-1 theory that, you know, you ask 10 girls to dance and two of them will say yes and one will F you. So, you know, that's the, you know, really, the, you know, you got to play the law of averages there. That's how that works.
Yeah, police found 26 videotapes in his home showing more than 200 girls.
I just don't get that. I mean, look, I'm into you know, whatever, you know, like, you know, the bizarre things, you know, on the scale.
Are you really?
Well, apparently, but maybe not, because I said the pregnancy thing. And I'm not even, like, into pregnancy porn or whatever, but it's like, I said, you know, like, pregnant chicks can be kind of hot, which maybe they are, maybe they're not. Was it you that I had this whole discussion with about maybe it was just the hot chick that sat next to me in articulation class?
Yeah, you have told me.
So I guess I'm really not, but, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I like to think that I'm more exotic than I really am, and then I realize I really am just dull. I'm just a dumb, horny guy most of the time, which is, I think, what most men are, especially when you see the baseline set by a guy like this who is truly bizarre. I mean, it really is just not even really wrong. It's just, it's like, what's her name? It's like Rachel Ray's husband that just wanted chicks to spit on him all day.
Yeah.
Not even F him. Just spit on him. It's like, what's the point? I mean...
Yeah, I was getting her magazine for a while, and every time she'd mention his name, I'd just kind of shudder.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't... Like, I remember the first time that I was, I don't know if I rented it or I bought it or something. It was like, when I lived in Salt Lake, you couldn't buy any porn in Salt Lake. It all sucked. And, but we were in Vegas and a bunch of us went to Vegas, like a mixed group of like seven of us. And I remember in Vegas, we all made a big thing of like, hey, well, we're in Vegas. Let's buy some porn because we live in Utah where it sucks. And so we made this, like, everybody was sort of drunk and it was kind of like this 2 a.m, like going to like one of the many porn stores in Vegas just to sort of like zanily buy some porn. And I remember buying like this bondage video that seemed sort of intriguing from the cover, and because it was like hot chicks and like somebody was like, you know, somebody was like holding like a flogging thing. I was like, well, that seems like it might be hot. And I remember realizing later it was like the least hot thing ever because there was no effing at any point. No point. And yeah, nobody, anybody F anybody else.
That is the whole problem, is that there are all of these prohibitions against actual bondage porn. So you either get like the bondage and the flogging and the tying up and the what have you, or you get the effing. But you can't have them both in the same thing unless you go kind of black market with that stuff.
The internet.
Yes. Well, yeah, but you have to find the place on the internet, I guess. So it's kind of, you know. To be honest, it's a little disappointing.
Really, honestly, yeah. No, I remember just watching this and I kept fast forwarding, just going like, when is she going to take her top off? And then like the answer was never. So I think I never know what I did with that. I don't own it anymore. I don't think I know anybody who wanted it. Maybe I just put it on the curb or something. I might have just given it to Goodwill. I'm just stuck like Biodome on the side of it and gotten rid of it. By the way, we should tell you that as you were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program today, whether it's your penis watch, whether it's your hick watch, whether it's your corpse watch, whether it's Mr. Aaron Cronin, whether it's Jim Willie DeMar with Humor Me, Comedy 101, all of it brought to you by our business partner, Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com, or you can call them at 503-252-1609, or facebook.com/SquiresElectric is where they can be found, and you can hit the like button for them right there if you would. And you know, the next time that you might not need it right away, you might not be anything that there's call for today or tonight or tomorrow, but you want to make a note of it, because if you're going to be dealing with, you know, any sort of an issue that has to do with wires or wiring or electricity, or you know, the fuse panel, or the something like a tree hits a power line outside and it's like done something wonky to your, you know, all of the setup you got inside your house, or you got the air conditioner you're going to run this summer and you don't want to be the guy who causes like a rolling brownout across the city. You just make sure that everything is handled properly, and you do that by contacting Squires Electric. That is 503-252-1609. Or you can also go online to find them at squireselectric.com. You go to their Facebook page, you can also see unsolicited testimonials from people just like yourselves who have contacted the Squires Electric and have had any number of satisfying experiences with them, where you get the estimate up front so you know what it's going to cost and all that, and they get everything done right the first time. Can't ask for more than that. SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. We still have do we have a watch left?
No, we do not.
Really?
Really?
We're all watched out. We got it all taken care of.
We got it all taken care of.
We're done. We're handled.
Yes.
All right. Let's do one more here, and we will bring the curtain down on things for today. Don't forget to check out If you're into this sort of thing, yesterday's episode of FunEmploymentRadio.com, where you can hear me schooling Greg at Encyclopedia Brown Mysteries. Also, HamFistedRadio.com is the place for HamFisted Radio. Paul Mooney was today on FunEmploymentRadio.com, and then that Aaron Cronin interview will be up. We're going to excerpt that, and that'll be up on his site later on today as well. So here is Don Taylor at the news desk with one more.
I was trying to decide which one to share.
I'll give you some thinking music.
Give me some thinking music. Okay, this one's pretty self-explanatory. This Caddo Parish, Louisiana deputy accidentally shot himself in the thigh while putting his gun in his holster. The sheriff's office said 55-year-old Deputy Larry Trent is assigned to the work release program, transporting prisoners to and from work assignments. About 5 p.m., Trent had just brought some inmates back to Caddo Correctional Center. He had just gotten out of the sheriff's transport van and was holstering his gun when getting into his personal vehicle. The gun accidentally fired, hitting Trent in the thigh and exiting through his calf.
Wow.
While the investigation is not complete, it appears that Sheriff Steve Prater is looking at the shooting as an honest mistake and no policy or law was violated. He said, when you have 800 people carrying guns, occasionally something like this will happen.
That's sort of the another variation on the 10-2-1 rule. One guy will inadvertently shoot himself. But I don't understand. He shot himself. Where did the bullet go in?
It went into his thigh, and it apparently went all the way down his leg and went out his calf.
Like riding a subway line.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, yeah, he was found on the ground outside the correction center.
Ow, ow.
He was taken to the hospital where he's listed in fair condition.
Fantabulous. And with that, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of the Rick Emerson radio program. We thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, tomorrow our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig with another exciting installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. That is coming up tomorrow and so forth. Today, we want to thank our guests, including Mr. Aaron Cronin, creator of Cognition, The Robot Uprise. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast of Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer, Bruce Agler. Chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2011. And that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, we thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.